There they are.
Whoops. Don't touch the computer.
Yeah. It never fails when I present that I try to use my arrows, but I don't like have it on the screen, so it just beeps at me and nothing happens. And I'm pretty sure it happens every time. Like, you think, you know, think you would learn after the first
right.
time. So we've got 2 minutes till go time.
All right. Oh, wow. Stacking up.
Okay, it is 3 o'clock. We're going to go ahead and get started. Welcome everybody to Teaching Statistical Thinking. I am Becky Menning. I'm a math marketing specialist here at Wiley. So a few things to get us started. You have all been entered in listen only mode. If you have any comments or questions, you can put them in the chat box or in the Q&A, and we'll be monitoring those throughout the session. So welcome here to Dr. Mark Early, who is in his 24th year of teaching introductory statistics courses at Columbus State Community College. He frequently engages in classroom-based research to better understand both the teaching and learning of statistics. His current emphasis is on critical and statistical thinking in the introductory course. Mark, over to you.
Great, thank you, Becky. So, hi everybody. As Becky said, my name is Mark Early. I am in Columbus, Ohio at Columbus State Community College, where I teach statistics courses to a variety of audiences. And today I'm going to talk a little bit about statistical thinking as I have worked with it and experienced it in with my students. There are a couple kind of key points that I hope you take away. One of those is I am going to be tying statistical thinking in with critical thinking and showing a couple links where some of the critical thinking literature might help us here. And my other emphasis is really going to be on making sure that we are deliberate and explicit with our students and let them know this is what you're doing. You are now statistically thinking or thinking statistically, you know, kind of make that obvious to them so that they know when they leave the course that that is something they did, that, you know, they actually did. So why look at these ideas? One of those is we've seen many surveys of employers, and critical thinking always pops up to the top, usually the top three, if not the top one, as an essential skill that employees need. And one of my beliefs is that statistical thinking is critical thinking about statistics, and there's some support out there. Gay's guidelines sort of mention that as well. What happens is students usually do not walk into our courses, especially at the introductory level, knowing how to think critically or knowing how to think statistically. And sometimes they may have had that experience, but they were never told that's what they were doing. And so we see that in surveys as well. Instructors will say, yes, I teach critical thinking, or I incorporate critical thinking into my assessments. And students of out of the same class will say, nope, never saw it, never heard it, never did it. So again, making that explicit is going to be important. We want students to be able to leave our courses going to those interviews with those employers and saying, here's a skill I have. I know how to not only create, but also talk about and in some cases critique statistics and graphs and be able to explain them to others, not only what's there, but what's behind it, what's behind that graph or statistic. And again, what we need to do, I think, is we need to be more careful about telling them, this is when we move beyond the calculation, we are now moving into the area of statistical thinking. This is what you're doing. So I'm hoping most folks are familiar with the GAES guidelines that were just revised, well, not just, 4 years ago revised. And they have six recommendations. And the first of those is teaching statistical thinking. I put all six here because obviously, and as GAES says, they're all interrelated. So when we focus on conceptual understanding, helping students understand what variability actually is, what it means, we're working toward that statistical thinking idea. Using real data with context and purpose is also something that allows students to engage in statistical thinking meaningfully. They're not just looking at random numbers, but they're actually looking at a particular scenario, a particular context. Active learning and collaborative learning, I would add in there, are excellent for students working together to think statistically about different scenarios and also learn from each other. And, you know, this is my opinion on this graph. What do you think? And you kind of bounce ideas off of each other that way. So we certainly would like many opportunities where students can do that together. Using technology also helps because it takes all of that hand computation out of the way. We have more time to devote to statistical thinking. We can get a graph up on the screen and start talking about it rather than spending a whole bunch of time first creating the graph. And then of course, the sixth recommendation is using assessments to improve and evaluate student learning. And I think that those assessments must incorporate questions and scenarios that require statistical thinking. We need to develop it, we need to assess it. One of the ideas presented in GAES is that what we want students to walk away with is that ability to think statistically. That really is an outcome that we should be focusing on. Impact, coming out of AMATIC 2 years ago, also talks about critical thinking in a couple different ways. They encourage in the engagement pillar to promote learning environments that promote discourse, critical thinking, and student self-monitoring, some reflective activities as well. And when students are given the ability to apply these statistics ideas to real-world problems, we're moving them beyond that idea of here's how to calculate variance to let's start critical thinking. Let's start thinking about this. Impact also indicates that a learning environment that promotes and cultivates critical thinking has a lot of features, including reflecting the knowledge of students' skills, their interests, their cultural backgrounds, et cetera. And I think this is a prime opportunity for us as statistics educators to engage our students with social justice issues. This is a perfect opportunity to get to know them and help them understand the world maybe in a different way. So the next couple slides are absolutely filled with text, and I know that's horrible PowerPoint practice, but I decided to leave them that way because I'm going to present some definitions of statistical thinking and critical thinking, and both of these ideas are really complex. There's a lot that goes into them, and you really can't parse out a piece of the definition you need the whole chunk to really dive into what are we talking about. So from gaze, what we're looking at is thinking critically about statistical issues. And the type of thinking that statisticians use when looking at and solving problems should be taught and emphasized. That's key in the gaze report. I also found another sort of definition that I like, and this is from Frank Harrell. He is a biostatistician, and I'm now going to forget where he is, but he has a blog, and a couple months ago, he defined statistical thinking as a different way of thinking that is part detective, part skeptical, and involves alternate takes on a problem. And I think in math in general, we really like to see students approach problems from different perspectives. And statistics is certainly no different in that way. And again, that's moving students out of get a number into what does it mean? Okay, Beth Chance wrote what I consider to be one of the seminal articles. It's dated, it's 2002, but it covers a variety of definitions of statistical thinking in her article. And she sort of wraps them all up with this statement. And again, as Gaze alluded to or stated, what a statistician does is what we're talking about. Moving beyond summarizing data, solving a problem, and getting into explaining the conclusion, seeing the process as a whole, including why. Why are we doing this? Understanding variation, such a key concept in our course, and being able to generate new questions, which is something I definitely emphasize in my classes. What does this graph lead you to wonder? Sort of if you go to the what's going on in this graph series, and their questions involve some of that generating new questions. What do you wonder? What do you see? What do you wonder? What questions come up for you? And I always butcher her name, but Fan Cook and Wild also talk about the ability to question claims in the media and to critically evaluate such reports. This is higher level thinking. If you're thinking in terms of Bloom's taxonomy, we're up at evaluating and creative thinking and things like that, up at the higher end of that taxonomy. When students are confronted with having to make a judgment or critique a report, they have to think about themselves. What are you willing to believe? What else should be done, or what should be presented? What do you need to see to convince you further? And all of this requires that critical disposition. So I firmly believe statistical thinking, critical thinking, we can learn a lot from the critical thinking literature as well. And I don't see a lot of that when I look at statistics education literature. It comes into play. I'm not saying it's 100% ignored, but I think we could do a lot more with just the generic critical thinking area. It's been around for a while. There are, of course, as many definitions of critical thinking as there are people talking about it. It is very hard to define. Criticalthinking.org, which is the Foundation for Critical Thinking's website, has these characteristics of a well-cultivated critical thinker. And I just wanted to highlight a couple. They raise vital questions, which I think is a very good statistical thinking practice. They gather and assess relevant information. So we look beyond the graph that is on this website to how is it created? Is it sample based or not? Is it estimates or is it actual data? All these kinds of questions behind the scenes. They think open-mindedly, they communicate effectively. And I those are some of the highlights there. There's also another definition that Michael Scriven and Richard Paul presented quite a few years back that talks about these higher order Bloom's taxonomy skills, conceptualizing, applying, analyzing, synthesizing, evaluating. There's just so much involved. And a lot of times, workshops that I'm in related to critical thinking always come around to the question of how much time should I devote to this? And what's that going to do to the time I'm spending on content? And that's a fair question. And I think that, you know, for sure with statistical thinking, if we weave these ideas in, it's a necessary component of the course. We can't just teach pure content and eliminate developing students' ability to think about these ideas. Perry created one critical thinking scheme that I've looked at. There are a lot of issues with this scheme. Okay, so for example, he did this at Harvard with predominantly white male students. So there are individuals who have worked on expanding that base and worked with this scheme. There are people who don't like it. There are people who do. The reason I like it is because of really the first two ovals here on the left. When our students come into a course, particularly statistics, a lot of times the question I get is something along the lines of, I'm horrible at math. I just need to get a C so I can move on. And so they're stuck in that place where this is a math class, which leads them to think in terms of right and wrong answers. It leads them to think that we are going to solve problems that have a correct answer. They're in that dualism phase of this, of developing their critical thinking skills. And some students will come in, excuse me, with this multiplicity idea that there may be other perspectives, and we can move them along. So I have an example here applying this with dualism. The main idea is knowledge is received, not learned. There is a correct answer. And so, for example, students are often surprised to hear that this histogram may not actually tell the whole story. They are looking at that histogram as the answer to whatever the question is. With multiplicity, students start to recognize there may be more than one solution, or there may be no solution. That's also an option. They recognize that their opinions matter. And I think that's key as well here. This histogram, now students begin to think this histogram is one representation of many. I think it's questionable, or it could be improved by dot, dot, dot. And they fill in what they think. And I think that's just an excellent place for students to be. Relativism is where students start to see that knowledge is contextual and they evaluate viewpoints based on source and evidence. This gets to a lot of the emphasis in Gaze and other reports on data, data production matters. So we spend a lot of time in our course focusing on that in the first sort of chunk of the course. We talk a lot about where do data come from, and that primes the pump. That helps students begin to see, okay, when I look at this histogram, you know, who is the sample? If this is sample data, who is included, who wasn't? Are there limits and what are they? And they look at that in a contextual way. There's this last stage of commitment within relativism where they integrate knowledge from other sources like statistics and graphs they see on the internet, along with personal experience and some reflection. So here's what I think of this histogram based on what I know about it and based on my experience and based on other histograms I have seen, maybe other information I've learned in other courses. This is a high level of critical thinking, and I personally am very excited when I see students at multiplicity, when they are recognizing there may be more than one solution and that their opinions matter. I think giving them that voice is so important. I also am very delighted if I can nudge a few up to the relativism phase where they start to get into that contextual thinking, but that sometimes can be a challenge. So Wilde and Van Cook in 1999 listed out a variety of dispositions. And in any conversation that you hear about critical thinking, one of the pieces of that is disposition, students' dispositions toward critical thinking. And I think, as demonstrated here, we also have to monitor students' dispositions toward statistical thinking. Do they even care? is an important first step. There has to be that motivation, and it's very hard. It's an internal motivation. It's very hard to say you will care. Some of them don't, quite honestly, and so we work with that. We integrate into our discussions. Let's be skeptical. Let's imagine something. Let's think outside the box here. Can we be curious? Can we be open? Can we be logical? Can we seek deeper meaning? And can we persevere? If we don't see the answer right away, can we continue to dig a little? Or do we just give up and say, I have no idea? These match very closely with some critical thinking dispositions. And again, just like critical thinking definitions, you're going to see a variety of lists in terms of critical thinking dispositions. This particular list comes from Insight Assessment. They have an inventory called the California Critical Thinking Disposition Inventory. And it measures these seven dispositions. Truth seeking, which I think is very much tied to that propensity to seek deeper meaning that we saw with statistical thinking. Open-mindedness, which definitely goes with openness. The systematicity, the logical thinking, the process that's involved. The inquisitiveness, going with curiosity and awareness. There's also a sense of confidence that I am maybe even moderately confident or very confident that what I think is appropriate. And again, we get into that idea of multiplicity and the idea that there are other perspectives. And so are students considering those? Okay. All right, so I wanted to take a brief little breaky here and do a poll where I'm just kind of curious, as you're thinking about these ideas for your course, if you're teaching introductory statistics, that is an assumption I make. Where do you think you would start in this process of developing statistical thinking? Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of graphing, some descriptive statistics. Yeah, not so much probability. That's probably not a good place to start. I would agree there. Thank you. And to those of you who are and have responded, I would agree graphing is a good place to start. We actually I mentioned earlier, we do that kind of knowledge, a data production piece early on in the course. And then we work into graphing. And while the data production piece, I didn't give you that option here, and I probably should have, is an important one to get students thinking. Graphing is the first spot where they are sort of doing statistics in the sense of looking at data and creating a graph. And that's where I start emphasizing in my course the fact that you are not done when you have this histogram generated. This is not the end. The end is for you to tell me what you see and what you don't see, and talk about this histogram. So graphing is generally where I start because that I feel like that's kind of the earliest part in the course where they are both doing statistics and thinking about statistics. Most of the intro material is more on the lines of thinking, a lot of concepts for us, a lot of vocabulary, and not so much on the data analysis wing quite yet. So graphing is where that starts, and that's where I begin. So thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, so what I'm going to do next, I did say in the abstract that I was going to cover two concepts, histograms and correlation. As you can tell by the way time is going, I eliminated the correlation one so that I could have some time left for Q&A at the end of the session, and B, weave in a little more of the critical thinking ideas. So for the histogram unit, I just kind of want to walk through some ideas that I have about how this might look, and well, how it does look for my class, but how you might start to think about ways to, you know, continue to teach the content. You're gonna teach them about histograms, but you're gonna do so in a way that is the full picture. It's the full spectrum from creating to statistically thinking. And so I do start with some time spent on the process. I do believe that it is important for students to know how histograms are created, where they come from, so that they can better evaluate them. We do some histograms by hand just to get the feel for it. We, at our college, we are, quite honestly, what I would say is a tad behind on the technology area. We're still in the world of TI-84 calculators. So we can have them do histograms on the calculator, but I think doing one or two by hand, we don't spend hours on that. But just getting them into that mode of, okay, here's how this happened. Here's how this came together. And then we spend some time talking about the characteristics of that histogram. So we take a look at outliers and we talk about unusual values. We talk about shape, we talk about center, we talk about spread. And early on in the course, we don't use calculations for center and spread. We don't talk about the mean and standard deviation. We actually, for center, the way we talk about it first is with the median. We try to get them kind of focused on the middle value. And with spread, we're just looking at kind of what range of values does this histogram even cover? What range does it present? After this unit, we get into descriptive statistics. So it's the very next step. But then, excuse me, we finish with some time spent discussing what that picture means. And so what's going to happen is we are going to, I have an example here of a histogram that I have used that is 2020 minimum wage by state. And this includes the Washington, D.C. So there are 51 values here. And I show them the data and I show them the histogram. This is not one we build by hand, but I show them the data, I show them the histogram, and I say, okay, what do we have? What are we looking at? So the first part of that is, you know, we dive right into those characteristics. We don't really see any outliers. Everything seems to be connected pretty tightly. We do see a shape that is skewed to the right. We see a center around $8 there, that second bar, and a spread from $7.25 up to $14 per hour. And we handle some misconceptions at this point. For example, some students will say that 7.25 to 8 is an outlier because it's the highest bar. Other students will say 11 to 11.75 is an outlier because it's the lowest bar. If there are any gaps in a histogram, students sometimes identify those gaps as outliers. So we spend a lot of time talking about focusing on the ends of the x-axis and in our search for outliers. Students usually, by this point, are good with this. So misconceptions get cleared up. And the next thing we start to do is dig a little deeper. So one of the things I ask them is, what does skewed to the right tell us about minimum wage? What does that mean? Okay, it's not just an answer. It's not just a characteristic of a histogram. It's actually telling us something. And what is that? Is the first bar on the left surprising if you know the federal minimum wage is 7.25? Okay. No, it's not so surprising anymore because a lot of states are very close to that minimum. There are a lot of states at that minimum, quite honestly, but this is a range of values up to $8 an hour. So there are some states in that far left bar that are not at the federal level. But we talk about that. We talk about, you know, why do some states just stay with $7.25 and why are other states up at $13 and $14? We start to wonder. What's happening? what questions does this histogram bring up for you is a very next step. And students, you know, will throw out the litany, who is the sample? And well, we know the sample's the 50 states plus DC. So, you know, some students get into this mode of, well, who are the people who were surveyed? And it's like, okay, well, let's go back and talk about data production again. Where did this data come from? It wasn't a survey. It was, you know, record, you know, just this is what the minimum wage is for this state. How is this data created and is it trustworthy? You know, this came from a particular website that focuses on minimum wage. And as far as we know, they have accurate values. We could probably dig a little deeper to see what their sources were. I asked them to imagine talking to a friend who wonders what minimum wage looks like. How would you describe it? Use this histogram. What would you say about minimum wage? What else do you want to know? What other things are not in this graph? And here again is where we sort of get into some social justice conversations about the states that are at the federal minimum wage and the individuals who live in that state and cost of living and other ideas like that. It's a pretty robust conversation. And I also asked them to think ahead to how would you go about learning more? So if there is something you want to know, what would you do next? And so we talk about related variables, related statistics, related, you know, and again, we're getting into that now, into that multivariable thinking that Gaze strongly recommends, and starting to think about, okay, well, what would happen if? And we throw out some scenarios. Students like these discussions, and you know, there are definitely students who won't offer an opinion for fear and other reasons. And there are definitely very chatty students who will answer every one of these questions with three or four different answers. And so it's a fun time. But what's nice is to see some of those students who in the beginning don't think their answer is going to be right, start to trust that they have an opinion and they can throw out an opinion and we can talk about that. It's not going to be shut down. Another key part or statement rather in Gaze is modeling statistical thinking. It is mentioned at the end of this recommendation as the first sort of recommendation for instructors, model it. We need to show them how this is done. This is particularly important early in the semester when students have no experience thinking critically and they are looking, they still think they're in a math class. They want the answer. They don't want to hear it depends. That's a running joke in all of my classes because 9 times out of 10, that's how I answer a question. And they all start answering for me when somebody asks a question because there are just so many possibilities to think about. We engage in class discussion and depending on how class is going, that may be kind of a think, pair, share idea. That may be pairs that come into groups of four. That may be some individual thinking, some individual writing for about 2 minutes. What do you think? And then share with a group. So, you know, we get students kind of used to sharing their opinion, but also feeling confident in that. That's a very important part of this process, I believe. I can't talk about statistical thinking without talking about assessing it. And Jane Watson in the assessing or the assessment challenge in statistics education talks about three tiers for working with assessment. And one of those is that basic understanding level, students creating and analyzing their own data sets, you know, which sort of goes along with that idea I mentioned earlier that students do need to know how a histogram is created before they can actually work with it, in my opinion. We embed language and concepts in a wider context. We read and interpret written reports. So we see what a website says about a graph, or we look at a news article or something like that. And then we move into that level of questioning of claims. The students have the confidence to challenge what they read in the media. Now, most critical thinking seminars will say it is possible to create any type of assessment item that assesses critical thinking or statistical thinking. You can do a multiple choice question that requires statistical thinking. It is absolutely possible. If your intent is really to get to know their thought process, to really get that level of detail of how did you come to your answer, the more open-ended items will prevail. You definitely will be looking at some short answer responses and items like that. But you can also assess statistical thinking objectively. That is absolutely possible. One example that I've used in my class is out of the histogram chapter, you generated a graph of data based on obesity data gathered by the CDC. So they were given a set of data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and created a histogram from that. What I want them to talk about is beyond those characteristics, shape, center, spread, because they're going to default to those. They're going to say, well, it's skewed to the left. Here's the center. Here's the spread. That's great. I'm glad you know that. I want to know, what does this graph tell you about obesity? And the data came from 2009. So we're talking specifically about that context, that year. How would you describe the 2000 obesity situation to a friend? What more would you like to know? You know, again, some of the questions I showed earlier. This is a short answer response on the student's homework that question 1114 is one of their homework questions where they generate a histogram. And then at the end, I ask them to go back to that picture and talk about it and give me more than just the basics. All right, so what I have started using in my class is something called the Contemporary Issues Journal. The K. Patricia Cross Academy, I don't know if you're familiar with that or not, is a website that is a variety of assessment options for a variety of different learning outcomes, including online adaptations. When everything went virtual in March, they automatically adapted to that. And so all of their descriptions of the assessments include online adaptations. The website is there. It's also, if you have the handout, all of these resources that I've been talking about are listed at the end of the handout, kpcrossacademy.org. The beauty of this website is they have offered these materials for free. You don't have to sign up. You don't have to pay for anything. It is there for you to use. They have a wide variety of assessments and details on how to integrate that assessment into your course, examples of how others have done so, and options for kind of branching out from kind of their guidelines. So what this assessment does for my class is I have students start by selecting a topic, any topic that's important to them. And this quite honestly throws them. They're like, anything? Do I have a list to pick from? What topics can I pick? And right away they're thrown into that, I don't care what topic you pick, as long as it's clean, you're fine. Pick a topic that resonates with you. And I give some examples. You know, students in the past have talked about mental health. They've talked about, of course, COVID right now is a very hot topic. I have one student right now who has a concealed carry permit, and she is very interested in concealed carry surveys that talk about people's impressions and opinions of that. So I get all kinds of things, which is really nice because I get to know my students, especially in this virtual environment. This is an opportunity for us to connect because I can talk to them about, that's a really interesting idea. You know, what have you done with it or whatever? So, you know, every once in a while I can engage in some one-on-one conversations with students. What they have to do then is they have to seek and discuss a statistic or graph related to that topic. And they actually do five of these. The first one that they do is ungraded. Students are for the most part, not used to an assessment like this. They have thousands of questions. And so I do not grade the first one. I give them feedback on how they did and things they might do differently when they start getting into the graded options. They build a portfolio of these throughout the semester and then reflect. There's a reflection at the end of the process on what they learned. The questions I ask after I ask them to present their graph or their statistic, summarize it first. What did you find? What is it about? How is it created? Give me the data production part of things. What does it say? And this is actually a question some students struggle with because they immediately want to go to opinion and talk about you know, well, this is a problem because of this or whatever. And so I have to rein them back in for this question and say, just tell me what you see. I want us to start there. Then I want you to list two questions you have about this information. I want you to reflect on specific course content you have covered so far that relates to what you found. Now, the first one that's ungraded is kind of challenging because I have them do that right away and they may not have yet finished chapter one or two. So some of them will write, well, I haven't covered anything yet, so I can't answer this question, which is fair for early in the semester. And it's ungraded, so I don't worry about it. But I do give them some suggestions moving forward. And then I want them to reflect on how this information relates to your personal or professional life. That can be a current job you have or your future plans. So my pre-nursing students, how does this relate to your future job as a nurse? And that gets them thinking deeply, which I love. The responses to these are awesome. I do have examples, but due to time, I didn't want to throw any in here. If you are interested in seeing, I do have some students who have allowed me to share their work blinded, but I have some great examples of what students are doing with this assessment. So in the last couple seconds here before some Q&A, I just wanted to give a quick wrap up. I do feel it is commonly accepted fact that critical and statistical thinking are important. I treat that as a given. I do believe we must be intentional about this. We must state clearly and often, this is what you're doing. I want them to leave my course knowing they did that. A big piece that I have not talked about that really is important to think about is the culture of the classroom. How are you going to set up that classroom to encourage and not minimize students' opinions and ideas and their abilities to critically and statistically think? That does need to start from day one. We need to model it. We need to ask for it. We need to comment on it. We need to assess it. We need to be deliberate with what we're doing. So that is what I have for you today. My contact information is there. I believe I also put it in the handout, but I might not have. But I am open to any questions anybody has.
Yes. So, Mark, we have a few things. First, we have two requests. One of them is about the handout. Not everybody has that. So if we could find a way to make that available, maybe even submit that to be available on my Amatic.
I did send it to Wiley. So it should be posted somewhere in the I'm not sure where it's posted, but it was submitted to Wiley, but I can also put it in my Amatic. That's not a problem.
And then a second request was, please share those student examples that you talked about on my Amatic.
Okay.
I would like to see those.
I will do that.
All right. And then we have a question. You require a textbook in your course?
Yes. We use Moore and Knott's Statistics, Concepts, and Controversies. That is a textbook that runs across all of our elementary statistics courses. It's STAT 1350. Every course, every section uses that book.
Okay. Thank you. Why do you choose to give students the first assessment without aligning it so they will have finished the first reading?
Well, there are a few things. One of the reasons is our college really encourages graded assessment in the first week in order to get students engaged immediately. So I don't grade that one, but I want them to start thinking right away about just the process. I'm not as concerned about the content or stuff. That first one is almost sort of a pretest. You know, in a way, it's almost sort of, where are you at right now and how can we move you forward?
Great. I have one more question. How do you manage assessment? I teach close to 200 students, also at a community college. Do you have a rubric the students get used to?
The assignment sheet that I give for this Contemporary Issues Journal has point values for each of the questions listed. That's kind of a broad question. Assessment happens a lot of different ways. I personally do not have, I have a rubric, students do a group project. And there are rubrics for that when they're working in their groups. But, you know, we do chapter exercises, we do the contemporary issues journal, we do, we have a departmentally required midterm and final that all the sections do. So assessment runs a variety of different angles. If you have something specific that you're looking at or wondering, send me an email and we can certainly talk about that. I you know, I can give you some ideas.
Great.
Hi, Rachel. Yes, it's Columbus State, not Kansas. The Cougars, Columbus State Cougars.
Yes, and that is all the questions we have right now. So if anybody else has another question, you can throw that in. We have just a few more minutes. And Dan in the chat box, the worksheet, yes, we will share that. It should be on the Wiley app and Crowd Compass already, I believe. And then we will also, Mark will post that in the My Amatic spot as well.
Yeah, Wiley did get my PowerPoint and a handout, a PDF, which really is the PowerPoint put into text. So there's a lot of overlap between the two, but they do have both. So probably somewhere in the session or in the overall page for today's events, those items may be posted with my presentation. But I'll put them on my Amatic. That's not a problem.
Okay, I think that's everything. So thank you very much, Mark. We appreciate you being here with us today. And everybody else, thank you very much and enjoy the one last session. Next is, I think, a little bit of nerd trivia. Yeah. So a nice fun way to end the day.
All right, thanks everybody.